Hello, and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast, your weekly dose of inspiration and exploration. Join me, your host, Sam Harris, as I discover how mindset can help you do incredible things through my conversations with the world's most interesting people, from tech billionaires to leading scientists, best-selling authors to notorious hackers. The goal is to increase our collective wisdom and attitudes to make us all happier and healthier, wiser and wealthier. Who doesn't want that? So today on the podcast, we have Mario Norfol. You're a young entrepreneur, only 30, and you started in online retail with a smoothie business, I believe, which kind of you kicked off by selling products door to door before you grew it into like a 10 million business in just 2 years. You now run an entire group of businesses, the Athena Group. And with all this experience, you've been consulting a lot and you're basically here to give us a masterclass on everything you've learned. So welcome to the podcast.
Sam, thanks for having me. I've bootstrapped four businesses now to seven figures. No, three. A fourth one is about to get there. And then one is in the six figures. So bootstrapped to the seven or eight figures. But not all 13 businesses have reached success. A lot of them are either in progress or they just did not succeed. And that kind of goes to the whole way I do business. It's like test different. Some will work that I double down on and others don't. And that will always be the case.
Yeah, I could maybe use that as a way to describe how many businesses I've started then. All right. So could you briefly give me your life story in 4 minutes?
Sure, I could do it in even less than 4 minutes.
Oh, okay.
People like to talk about themselves for a long time, but I'm happy to keep it short. So I started business door knocking, as you mentioned, and then the first business I started was selling blenders online. I started on eBay, moved to a website. Every time something worked, so eBay worked, I heard that chi-ching sound on my phone, doubled down on that, then launched a website, didn't know anything about websites or entrepreneurship. And then from then, a year after that, so that business scaled to seven figures in the first year, selling high-end blenders and juicers in Australia, and then eight figures by the second year. So it grew really quickly. And then I expanded to over 30 countries. My next business after that was Optimum Appliances, also got to the seven figures in the first year. And then I did Real Food Revolution, an events business in Australia, became the first one, got to six figures. That's revenue. It was not profitable. It's events or barely profitable. And after that, I did it 2 years ago. That succeeded pretty quickly, seven figures in less than 6 months. That's the blockchain one I talked about. And then now my last business I'm doing is an e-commerce business again. It's called Zense. It's aromatherapy diffusers. Pretty cool product. Started about 6 months ago now. So it's a six-figure business. Should be seven figures by the end of the year. But in this case, because I was scammed last year, I started personal branding. And that business, I started documenting it. So you can actually watch me on camera. Try different things, watch what works, what doesn't work, how I respond to different things. So I've actually documented that business being bootstrapped soon to seven figures.
When you said you were scammed last year, what does that mean?
So the blockchain consulting business, it was flying high. It was doing really, really well. And then I had team members that were really close to me. I was very private. I didn't have LinkedIn. I didn't have Facebook, didn't have Instagram. Even though I knew the importance of having a personal brand, and clients didn't know who I was. I was not the face of the company. I was behind the scenes making the decisions. Even team members, employees didn't know that I was who I was or that I was the founder of the company because I wanted it that way. I wanted the company to not have my face so it can operate by itself so I can do other things. And that's a risky strategy because then people could take advantage of that and that's what happened. So people took advantage of that and took a lot of money from the company for 10 months before I found out. So it was a pretty, pretty horrendous experience. Almost destroyed the company, but we came out stronger.
Yeah, I was going to say, if there's going to be any business that was involved in the scam, it was probably the blockchain one.
It was, the crypto space in 2018, I've never seen anything like it. So I come from the traditional space, e-commerce, etc. And I got into this space. First, it was crazy amounts of money there. It's insane. The people that scammed me, they don't understand that there's a contract in place and scamming me. There's legal action that follows that. And there's legal action against them as litigation by me and the company. And it's like they, back in 2018, there was so much money. Everyone was on a high that they had complete disregard for the law. Not everyone. I'm sure there's a lot of good apples there, but there's some bad apples that were insane. One of the people that came to work with my company, we did not end up working with him, but he also tried to take money from the company. He ended up in jail. His name is Jerry G or something. I can't remember. You can watch him on the news. He's in jail for whatever crap he did. I had a lawyer blackmail us. It was an insane, insane year that obviously didn't, but I learned a lot.
Yeah, cool. So what did you learn?
Two cognitive biases that are pretty important back in 2018. The first one is always remember the human brain tends to overestimate the short-term impact of things, of innovation, and underestimate the long-term potential. Blockchain is the same. People thought blockchain is going to revolutionize the world back in 2018. When the technology is just starting out, you couldn't scale it. You couldn't do much with it in 2018. It was just the seed was just planted. Blockchain will probably revolutionize the world in 10, 20 years, but not the millions that were made in 2018 where people just getting overly exuberant. That hype, yeah, and that's normal. So human brain overestimating the short-term impact of innovation. So that was the first thing I learned. And then the second thing is, it's kind of related. Probably the biggest thing I learned, when it feels like the world is coming to an end, it probably isn't. And when something feels too good to be true, it probably is. In other words, humans are emotional. So when you feel like, that's it, man, you've reached rock bottom, things could never get worse. In 2018, I had that stage where I was scanned by people close to me at that company, IBC. And I was hiring one person a day at one stage, I was scanning like crazy. And then people that were very close to me, it was pretty brutal if I go into the details, the way they did it. So I had that happen. I had a personal issue. Then after that, I was diagnosed with a tumor initially. And then they told me it's a benign tumor, nothing serious. But I did not know that for a while. All of it within 2 months. Yeah, it's crazy. But, and then we feel the world is coming to an end. But I always have that stoic mindset. The Obstacle is the Way is a great book to read for that by Ryan Holiday. Is that, you know, when you feel like everything's falling apart, just remember it probably isn't. You're waking up, you have two arms, two legs, nice food, a warm bed, warm water. If you kind of focus on those things, you can get through pretty much anything in life. And also to remember when it feels too good to be true, like 2018 for many people making millions in months, it probably is. I knew that, always knew that, but many people did not back in 2018. So they spent that money on Lamborghinis and nice houses, first class trips. And then when the market went to crap, people that did not have money saved went to crap as well.
Cool. There's a great set of lessons there. Yeah, definitely feel you're on the world coming to an end. You get very caught in like your short term like horizon of what you can see just before you and behind you kind of thing. And you don't really think about the long perspective and, hey, I kind of was born with nothing and I'm fine. Like a few years ago, if I went and lived with my mom, it wouldn't have been a problem. Wait, I can just go and do that now. Life's fine.
I'm 30 years old, so I'm financially doing really well and I've been traveling for 6 years. And if the worst thing that could happen is me having to go back with nothing and live with my parents, my brother or someone, so what? If you don't care about what others think, if you don't care how others perceive it, then it shouldn't matter for you. The only thing that kind of makes it bad is what will people think if I'm going to live back with my parents? Who cares what they think?
Yeah. If you stop like fighting so much or worrying about losing things, and if you think like, if you're learning to play a board game, the first time round, you play a round and then like, it's just a demo one. You give all your money back, whether you win it or you lose it, you learn how to play and you can play again the next round and it's fine.
Absolutely. Now, I don't want to make it seem like failing is a good thing because you should not fail. And I know a lot in Silicon Valley say, you know, fail fast, et cetera. And it's starting to kind of like people are holding failures as a badge of honor. And I think that's a bit extreme on one side because I was speaking to someone about this. But at the same time, so you should aim not to fail. And so have money saved, be ready for a rainy day. If you've got money saved, when the rainy day comes, now we're living in good days. But when rainy days come, like in 2008, the people that are well cashed up and ready to go through that period, they're the ones that will come out stronger because you can acquire competitors, you can acquire customers for cheaper. While your competitors are scaling down, you can take a bigger market share. So when things improve, you're stronger. So that's on one extreme. Don't hold failure as a badge of honor. And on the other end of the spectrum, failure is not the end of the world. I've had businesses. So I've had two of my biggest companies in 2018, IBC. And before that, Fruity, the first business I launched that was doing incredibly well, like crazy well. It went through a period where also one of our suppliers breached their agreement, patent infringement, etc. I don't want to go into details. But we were screwed by the supplier and there's litigation against them as well. And that was just about less than a year before the IBC fiasco. So I had one fiasco, got through it, and then had another. So these things will happen. And almost both businesses almost failed. But luckily they didn't. Now they were healthy and strong. But it will happen even to the best of us. So when it does happen, again, just remember it's not the end of the world. So just balance it. Don't aim for failure. Try to avoid it. But when it happens, try to leverage that failure and make the most out of it. Like Sam, I told you I started personal branding last year. it got initiated by that scam. I realized the importance of building a personal brand, and that got me going onto podcasts. I launched LinkedIn, which I didn't even have, and that really turned out really positive for me. And the team launched my Instagram. So I kind of took that negative event and turned it into a positive. So kind of the stoic mindset. So I made something out of it. So now my business is healthy. I survived it, and I've got a building a personal brand that's getting a lot of value. It's been a pretty interesting journey.
That sounds really cool. And certainly agree with you. Like, it's not black and white on failure of like failure is great or failure is awful. It's definitely in between and just being sensible and logical about it.
Nothing is black and white. Nothing is binary. They did a research for billionaires, and the most common characteristic among billionaires was that they're not binary. It's not like black or white. Balance of both.
Yeah, such a big lesson. So yeah, you always hear people kind of preaching like one massive thing. It's like, well, no, there's always context and there's always like an opposing view, which can be more or less relevant depending on the circumstance. But yeah, onto what you then mentioned about personal branding and launching this. I'd love to hear how you've been launching your LinkedIn. That's something I've been meaning to do.
Yeah, so LinkedIn was interesting. Now, luckily, I've got a VC fund, and I did not know that there's a lot of bots and people looking for investors on LinkedIn. So because I have a VC fund that I launched in 2018, and I've got investor in my description when the team wrote my profile, that got a lot of people connecting to me, and I just could not keep up. So that worked out to my advantage. So if you're an investor, you're going to get a lot of people following you on LinkedIn. What I do on LinkedIn now, LinkedIn works really well with a video, and the engagement is insane. You know, like I'm doing now, if you watch my LinkedIn videos, it's the same background. It's put on the camera, or if I'm traveling, it's a different background. And then just talk about any subject. The more long tail it is, the more targeted it is to your market. So for me, I was doing a lot of content for blockchain because that was a market that's demanding content and it's not competitive. The engagement was really, really well. If you don't do very generic content that everyone else is doing, it's hard to stand out. So it's the same for SEO. Even for hashtags on Instagram, I was listening to a guy yesterday that did the Instagram for John Lee Dumas and the Entrepreneur on Fire. It's another podcaster I'm being interviewed by. And his Instagram guy was comparing hashtags on Instagram. Like SEO, the more long tail it is, the easier it is for you to stand out. Because if you're going to put hashtag work hard or hashtag, I don't use Instagram, but hashtag, what's a common hashtag that you see everyone using? Oh, YOLO, isn't that one you see? So that hashtag probably is millions of people using it every week or every day. So it's really difficult to stand out. But if you put a hashtag like, let's say in my space, in my niche, blockchain, there's something called initial exchange offerings, which is getting a lot of hype. You probably don't know what it is. Most people don't. But the people that do are a segment of the market that I want to relate to because that's our client. So if I put hashtag initial exchange offering, I'll be able to stand out because there's probably a few dozen posts on Instagram with that hashtag. And it's the same with LinkedIn. The more long tail it is, it works better. So that's one, long tail targeting. The second one is the video is working really well. And Instagram Live just launched, by the way, for a small group. And I'm one of the people that will be using it. And also what works in content is it has to be you. You don't want to post something like on YouTube, people posting videos of a cat. It's not going to get you business. It might get you millions of views, a cat that's dancing salsa. It's going to get you a lot of views, for example, but no one watching a cat dance salsa is going to be a client of yours, Sam, or a client of mine. So posting relevant content that even if you get a few hundred people watching it rather than millions of people watching it, but they're an audience that are investors or prospective clients of yours, is more valuable than getting millions of people that are high school students watching a cat dance salsa, for example. So the relevant content works well. But LinkedIn is really underpriced attention. LinkedIn and podcasts are very underpriced right now. Instagram is just getting too crowded from what I see.
Yeah, Instagram seems a bit OTT. But we'll see what happens with their new live stuff. But I think I'm agreeing with you on LinkedIn side of things.
I just remember LinkedIn is business oriented. So if you're B2B, you should be obsessed and living on LinkedIn. It works really well. Some people use LinkedIn bots as well, and they're apparently working for them. It's so effective. Honestly, YouTube is really good because it's evergreen content, and I'm obsessed with evergreen content. So currently I'm just doing LinkedIn and YouTube for, I call it building a personal brand, but essentially just connecting with my audience through doing videos myself. So LinkedIn and YouTube is what I'm focused on.
Cool. Okay. And then podcasts, how are you doing that? So you're just guesting all the time?
So podcast is also very valuable. I think podcast is probably even more underpriced than LinkedIn. Guesting is the easy way to get onto podcasts. for at least for me, because I've just achieved a lot. So I have stories to tell, a lot of value to give. So that's number one. Podcasts are insane, man. Just think about it. Look how much people like me on AdWords pay for you to just see my ad and click on it. I pay dollars, $5, $10 for you to click on my ad. Just click on my link. On YouTube, I don't know if you pay per view. You can, I think, pay per PPM. So pay by the amount of people that see your video. On podcasts, people are sitting there with these headphones in their ears, listening to you for an hour or half an hour. You're giving them value. And I try not to sell anything. I just give value. But they're listening to you for half an hour. You're building that relationship. So it's incredibly valuable for someone like me guesting podcasts. And for you, someone like you, people are trusting you to give them that knowledge. Attention is so difficult to get now. And you've got people's attention on that podcast. It's insanely effective. I want to launch my own podcast and promote it to my, I've got a massive email database. That will be targeted towards my niche. So I'm always very targeted because I just think it's really underpriced. Mm. It's not going to last forever. It's getting crowded or continue to get crowded. And I think the ones that will last, in my opinion, are the ones that will give value.
Yeah.
And I think everyone knows that. But the other point is that people that stand for something, because if all the podcasts are getting vanilla guests that are just giving the basic advice, yeah, you should work hard, you should hustle, you should run Facebook ads, you should do this. Like, this is the basics that you hear again and again and again with nothing different. I think people will slowly avoid those podcasts and focus on the podcasts that actually dig into the value. And what is it exactly that made you succeed? What did you do? What type of ads did you run, for example? And questioning and like challenging your guests. Like I said to you, in my podcast, I'm going to challenge the hell out of my guests to an extent where they're probably going to walk away. But I want to get that value. So if they say something, I want to dig into it. Is it really true? Now, you're saying you ran Facebook ads and it worked for you. Why did it work for you? You said that you built a great culture in your company from beginning. Did you really build a great culture when you had one employee? Did you care about culture or you just focus on closing clients? So I want to dig into the value, the meat of what made entrepreneurs successful. So that's my thoughts on podcasts.
Yeah, yeah. No, definitely. That's pretty much why I'm podcasting and what I'm trying to do. It's like so much more fun than...
And I think you're doing a great job. I was listening to your episodes earlier. So,
thanks, man.
Would agree.
Yeah. It does sound like you definitely have a good idea of it, though, which, yeah, a lot of people start and they kind of have no idea. You can get better at these things as you go along. But as a podcaster, as in you've said that you started getting loads of people on LinkedIn because you're an investor. As a podcaster, I've had loads of people starting to approach me with the kinds of guests that are quite vanillas. And I've just had so many like white middle-class guys that are semi-successful just come and try and be on my podcast. And you're like, whoa, I don't need another person. It's just the same as everyone else. I've really been quite strict on like actually getting women, getting people from other backgrounds or talking to people completely different, like students or, yeah, scientists, Olympian, going into a bit of everything.
I think that's really interesting. I heard that even in your intro, you said that you interview not just people that are successful financially, but they've achieved something more than that.
Mm.
So, and that's really interesting. Like now I'm done really well in business, but I love dancing and I really want to take that to the next stage and travel and do workshops, Latin dancing. So something different than just business is interesting. And yeah, being a podcaster on LinkedIn, I forgot you're going to get even more people connecting to you than investors. So when I start a podcast and I have investor and podcaster, I'm probably going to get flooded by messages. I actually don't manage my LinkedIn. I just don't have the time. I have someone that responds to my messages. My LinkedIn is managed by other people unless something needs my attention. Cause it just gets too crowded.
Yeah. Cause I mean, I responded to you cause it was like, okay, I looked into your profile. I was like, shit, he said quite a lot of cool things. I'm pretty sure he's going to have some really good advice, even though you kind of not in the description of who I'm really aiming for so much these days. But I was like, actually, it's great. Like, it's worth a conversation. And then your LinkedIn came back to me with like just some other guy that you immediately followed me off to. I was like, oh, I'm not so sure. Cause,
That's the strategy. I'll tell you the strategy we're trying. I don't know if it's working. I'd like to get your thoughts on it.
Yeah.
So the way we're doing it, because it's really difficult for me to reach out. I've got my businesses to run and it's hard for me to reach out to each podcaster. But I think anyone that wants to get on podcast, you have to personalize it. So if you want to reach
out
you have to say, look, I want to get into it. You'll probably say the same thing.
Yeah.
I've been listening.
Like I just ignore, I get so many things from like podcast introduction services where like they just have someone in their network and they'll just send me like the profile of someone who's never even heard of my podcast and say like, and I try and book it in. I'm like, well, I don't want someone that's never even heard of what I'm doing to just come up and sort of, I don't really need any more. I've got enough guests.
Exactly. As it gets more crowded, as more and more people like me understand the power of podcasts, I just enjoy it as well. I love the sharing knowledge. I didn't know I'd like it so much. But personalize it, number one. So my strategy, you get a message. But what we're doing now is that I've used references from other podcast interviews because they've been very positive, thankfully. And they've sent me emails saying, you know, you've done really well. So I put those references there. And then immediately someone else gets added to organize the time. So it's a very unique strategy. I don't know if it will work, but you seem to be responded negative. So it was a bit of a turnoff when someone else came in to schedule it.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause especially isn't it? I've just got like a scheduler anyway. All I need to do is send you one link and that would have been it. You only need to click that. Whereas you sort of immediately put me onto like your secretary and I was like, well, did he even send me the message in the first place? He doesn't seem to have time to talk to me. And like if it instantly turned non-personal and it's like, well, I mean, if I'm going to spend time interviewing someone, I kind of want to have a bit of a connection with them afterwards rather than not having time to talk to me kind of thing.
All right. Stop the podcast LinkedIn strategy.
Yeah. I mean, if you've got a Calendly anyway, you can just send that straight away.
I think a lot of people underappreciate the effort it takes people like yourself to set up those podcasts.
Definitely.
It takes a lot.
Yeah.
Putting in the mic. There's a lot of work behind the scenes that goes on and I'm starting to find that out myself as I prepare for a podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, my first 50 episodes, I think I worked out about 16, 17 hours an episode that it took me because I went super deep on like editing and things and learning everything. And now it takes way less time because I've actually bothered to like properly organize things, but I kind of enjoyed doing everything as manual as hell just to learn how to do it properly. And then other people come and just sort of make money off introducing a guest to me that's never heard of me. And it's like, well, my time is being abused here. It's not very like respectful. And
yeah, I think the same thing. There's a lot of these companies that are coming to me as well. Hey, we can get you on many podcasts. And I've actually got one that wants to speak to me today. It's called Command Your Brand. Not sure if you've heard of him.
Yeah, there's loads.
They will get anyone that pays onto those podcasts. You can just buy their service.
Mm.
So podcasters will just ignore them because they don't have your interest at heart. They have the people that pay them's interest at heart.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
it's weird.
It's interesting. Yeah. By the way, in terms of being a podcast host, having a small number of, I don't know how many listeners you have. The number of listeners I think will matter less and less in general. I think those podcasts have so many listeners that are very generic.
Yeah.
Are just.
Yeah, like you're saying, it depends on what you're doing. If you run a business that's specifically investing in really niche vertical, you only need like 100 listeners if they were going to be like huge clients. Whereas if
you. I'll give you an example. There's a guy called, I forgot his name, Richard Wilson. He's got a company called The Family Office Club. His websites are really outdated, but tremendous value. He's got 2,000 subscribers on YouTube. You might look at him like, yeah, only 2,000 subscribers. He does videos at least a few a week.
Hmm.
And then you look into it, his subscribers are family offices. So they're investors with hundreds of millions or usually billions of dollars. And that's his main audience. And some of them are startups wanting to raise capital. So if you have 1,000 followers that are family offices that are listening to you and trusting what you say, or you have 1 million followers that are just high school students, I'd rather appear on the podcast as the 1,000 family offices any day. So if the audience and the engagement matters significantly more than the followers. And I think that's across the board. Across the board, even with Instagram, we do a lot of influencer marketing. We're starting to not even look at followers. We purely look at engagement.
Yeah, it's all about, have you heard the phrase, sanity metrics, not vanity metrics?
Yeah, I've heard that. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. But it's so easy to get swept up in the vanity ones. And those are the ones that you always sound better when you tell someone and it's just how you get benchmark. It's quite annoying, but it's not actually that useful. But
by the way, I thought I look young. You look so young as well, Sam. I don't know if you're...
Yeah, I look pretty young. I get that a lot. I definitely look more like I'm 20 or something, but 28.
It's nice. I usually get compliments that I look young, but today I'm being interviewed by someone that looks younger than me and the first person to say I'm in my early 30s.
Yeah.
So today, big day. I'm going to have a midlife crisis after this interview.
Nah, you're going to be fine. I think it's nice. I think that is just meant to be a golden age.
Mm, a golden age, really, 30.
Yeah. You know, you're old enough to have like experience and things and you actually know what you're doing. You've been quite successful a bit earlier than average, but usually by the time you're 30, you've kind of learned about life and what you want to be doing and your place in it. And you're kind of young enough to make the most of that and like still put in like the really long hour days and.
Look, I'll be honest with you. I feel I'm old because I was in my 20s, now my 30s. That's normal. But logically speaking, if you're in your 30s, man, you're tiny. You're not even halfway through your life. So you're
definitely
a third of the way, maybe. if you're going to live.
And if you think of your working life, you're even shorter, because if you didn't like leave college until you're 23, you're only like a 7-year-old. And there's exactly. other people's running around who are 40-year-olds at like life. And you're like, oh, so much to learn still.
Yeah. It's just the feeling of not being in your 20s anymore, especially yeah. because I skipped from high school till about 20, 25. I pretty much kind of skipped life. I didn't have a life because I was yeah. so obsessed in self-development. I was so obsessed in business. I was so obsessed in getting me to where I am today. And then I started living life between 25 and 30. I kind of did everything. I had a whole bucket list and cleaned a lot of things in my life.
Cool.
But if I didn't do that, I think I'd be emotionally in a much worse position because I skipped such yeah. a big part of my life to build my businesses.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that you do when you first start building a business when you're young is like you go almost too far and you just completely lose context of everything else that's important. And you kind of, you get like to a bit later in life and you start working out, okay, what's the kind of business I want to run that I actually want to spend time running every day rather than letting it run me every day? And how else do I want to be building my life around it and the other fun things I can do and work out what you've got time for and such.
Every decision I have in life is pretty simple. I just want to die with no regrets. That's my goal. So any decision I make, I want to make sure it's a decision that will not regret when I'm in my deathbed. But
nice. What's an example of a big regret that you've had and you've worked hard to not have again?
None. I don't think I have any regrets.
None.
Yeah, I honestly don't.
You sure you're not lying to yourself? Because I mean, sometimes I might say that, but then I think I'm like, actually, yeah, there's some things which are really stupid.
You know, hindsight is 2020. It's hard to know where would I be if I didn't skip those 5 years of my life. So it's easy.
Yeah, very baffling.
I wish I started business. I dropped out of university earlier. But then maybe it was a bit too early. Maybe I should have done it at least some, because I dropped out of uni at year 2. I was doing banking and finance. I was doing well.
Yeah.
But then I heard an interview with a boy. I was like 20, 21. A boy, his name is Farah Gray. He made his first $1 million at age 13. I heard that. I realized that 2021 is not. I realized that 2021 is not too young. If anything, based on the interview that got that little boy, I'm actually too old. I mean, he dropped out of uni and went out door knocking. His name is Farah Gray, F-A-R-R-A-H Gray. I see you Googling it. G-R-A-Y.
Yeah.
So he had a mentor helped him, etc. So the story is not as him hustling, making $1 million, but his mentor kind of supported him along the way. But it kind of made me realize, and plus he's an African-American boy, so it's even harder in the US.
Yeah.
That was like 10 years ago. So I would have probably said, you know, start entrepreneurship, start self-development earlier. I wish I knew about entrepreneurship and started learning from others, other influences at a younger age. I wish I, you know, the Tai Lopez's, I know a lot of people like to hate on Tai Lopez and Gary Vee and all these guys. But yeah. maybe in my position now, there's not much value I can get from them. If anything, I'm giving them value. I'm helping Tai Lopez and his syndicate get investors. I can give more value. But in my early days, that's where I could absorb a lot of value from them and learn a lot. So I wish I actually knew about Tony Robbins and Tai Lopez and all these guys at a younger age, because I think I would have gotten to where I am today even earlier. But then again, that's easier said than done. Because back then I was doing Toastmasters to build my personal skills.
That's
I did door knocking. Yeah, exactly. So I did self-development. I was learning like crazy. Probably wasted my time learning about banking and finance. But then again, I've got one of my companies now.
Startups.
So it's really difficult. You see, I'm very calculated about it. It's easy to regret things. But when you start really digging into it and seeing how one bad thing led to
it. Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead.
It's the same with like, what advice would you give yourself 5 years ago? It's like, I'd probably have ignored my amazing advice that I'm giving myself because I just wouldn't have prioritized it kind of thing. So it's actually sort of like a bit of a null answer.
But I've actually had two podcasts ask me that. One of them, he says, now it's time to go back in time, and he puts some music. I forgot who it was. And then what would you say to yourself, the younger self, when you were back in high school or whatever? And it's actually difficult to come up with something.
Yeah, it's a bit of a fallacy really. But I guess if you could have given yourself a lesson that actually sunk in, what would you have given yourself?
Learn from others at a much younger age.
Yeah. Great tip.
Yeah, I think that's it. Like, don't learn from people around you, because you probably are not around people like Tony Robbins but you know, those names that have achieved tremendous success
when they're young. Definitely.
Richard Branson and Warren Buffett and Warren Buffett's business partner. What's his name?
Charlie Munger.
Charlie Munger, yeah, I'm bad with names. So yeah, learn from those people. But then again, I was reading Warren Buffett's book when I was a kid.
Oh, nice.
the investing one, not the business one.
But I think, again, like we spoke about, once you get a bit older, you kind of know what you're interested in. And you also, I feel like I've got a much more respect for other people now that I am older. I realize my own mistakes, and when I explain them to other people, is coming from advice that's actually, I've won that advice. It makes sense. And then when people don't value it, I can see that they're not getting it because they're like, as naive as I was. And I can see myself not listening to other people's advice when they used to tell me it. And now I'm like, wow, I really value other people's advice so much more. And I appreciate that someone who's 60 has got like twice as much experience as I do. And I'm like, shit, this is valuable. I just didn't get that when I was younger.
For anyone that's not listening to that advice, just ask yourself and be very honest. Who the hell are you not to listen to these people? Back when I was a kid, I was in high school in Australia. And I was just, you know, going out, playing basketball. I can't even remember what I did. And then how can I even have the audacity not to listen to people that are on a private jet and have done things that people could dream of? How could I know better? How can you not learn from those people? Where's the logic there? So I think the people that will get ahead in life are the people that are humble enough to keep on learning. There was Sam Ovens. He's just a very smart guy. He's got his business consulting.com. And I was on his LinkedIn earlier. And what he says on his LinkedIn, I was just reading it yesterday. His description is not founder, investor, CEO, which is my description. His description is lifelong learner, which I think is so important not to be opinionated, to always be learning. If Warren Buffett and Bill Gates, two of the richest people in the world, they admit that they're still learning till this day. To this day, they were asked, what's the superpower you would want to have? I think theirs was to read faster so they can learn more. If the most successful people in the world are still learning from others, I hate people that pretend they know the answer when they're not even close to getting to that. So, and look, that's not only for people that are young and just starting out, but even for entrepreneurs that have achieved success. Before I even started talking about entrepreneurship, I had to, not to build one successful business, even a $1 billion business, not one, because I don't know how much luck had, luck, never underestimate the power of luck. So I don't know how lucky I was. Was I in the right place at the right time? Did I meet the right person? How much did luck have a role to play in my success? And I always had that in my mind. But then I bootstrapped number one, bootstrapped number two. I had to bootstrap three successful businesses and onto my fourth before I had the audacity to jump on interviews and give advice to people, go to incubators and talk to startups. And even now, I don't pretend I know the answer. I'm still learning. I disagree with a lot of these influences, but I still listen to them. I don't care if they're 16 years old or 18 years old or they're 90 years old. I think that there's something you can learn from everyone.
Yeah, so true. That's why I try and interview like lots of different people, because there's just so many different people at different stages in life that you can kind of learn from. And if you only listen to the same kind of people, you're not really learning everything that there is to know.
Or especially if you listen to people that agree with you. Listen to people
Definitely.
Question what you know. Question like what's, he's in the PayPal Mafia, founder of Palantir. See, I'm bad with names.
Yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about though.
But he's a contrarian.
Do I just Google?
Google. I was about to Google it
it's
now.
It's on the tip of my tongue, I know.
PayPal Mafia. And he, Peter Thiel, I just remembered, is that right?
Yeah, Peter Thiel. 0 to 1 book.
Exactly, great book. So Peter Thiel would say, question, and it's a reminder that comes up every month for me. I have a lot of these reminders on my Asana project management tool. Just to remind me, question everything you know. Question it, and then I'll write it down in my task. And every month, I question new things and write them down. So that's a contrarian approach to things. And it just allows you to break down things and question the... If you do what everyone else is doing, it's very difficult to stand out. And everything I've done in my business, I've done things very differently. Like when I said I'm going to start my own podcast, my podcast will be pretty much a debate rather than a podcast. So I'm doing things differently. It could be a great success. It could be a massive failure. But you got to stand out and make some noise to be able to succeed. And that was something I did with all my businesses. Every time I launched a business, I try to make some noise. And if you look at, someone sent me a link about someone that made more noise than I did. His name is Vitaly something. He's a prankster on YouTube. You support Vitaly Prankster. And he launched a new business called Vitaly Uncensored. He got millions of dollars worth of marketing. It cost him pretty much nothing. He got his girlfriend, because he couldn't do it anymore. He's already done it once and he's been banned. He got his girlfriend to wear a swimsuit with his website on there and run in an American football in the field. And it was all over the news. One of my marketing people sent it to me. And it just shows how Most people wouldn't even think of doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
Can't explain why.
Yeah, nice.
He built his business.
Cool. Yeah, I know another guy is super creative. He's always coming up with like stupid products. And one thing he did was, he's called Shin. So he released an app called Shinder that was like Tinder, but only women can use it and they only match with him as he's the only guy on it. But he got onto like loads of like news stations and things and like this app being released where it was just completely stupid and it cost him like not that much to get it like built. And he's got so much attention for just being like kind of stupid and doing something that people hadn't thought of.
It's just like, if you look at a lot of these successful, even marketing campaigns, like what Hotmail did and adding that little in the signature.
Yeah, the viral.
Yeah, getting those viral roots. I've read a lot of books on virality. It's really hard to get it, but there is certain science to it because there's people that have done it time and time and time again. So I think it's something worth exploring, something I've always looked at and I want to do more of that.
Have you read Malcolm Gladwell's book about like virality? That one's a pretty good one.
And what's it called? I've read a few of his books.
Yeah, I want to say Outliers, but it's not that one. That's about like peak performance.
That's
it's to do with adoption and mass people doing things.
The tipping point, Malcolm.
The tipping point. Yeah, that's the what it's about. Oh. It's about getting the.
Oh yeah, getting of course, getting over that. That chasm.
Yeah, like,
I think I know what you're
talking about. The three chasm. Elements, which we're not going to remember right now. So.
Yeah, I want to go through. Yeah. I write summaries of every book I read. Actually, there's an app you can get called Blinkist. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, I have. It's quite good. I find it's almost better for books you have read just to remind yourself, as in to go back a year later, rather than you're just fooling yourself if you listen to books that you haven't read, think you're going to remember much. It's okay if you use it as like a way to qualify if the book's worth reading. But if you just listen to 15 minutes of what was a book as a summary, it just goes in and out your head pretty much. It's just there. So they go like, oh yeah, it's probably good or not.
Yeah. For me, there's two ways. Go ahead. Sorry.
But yeah, if you do listen to something that you've already read like a few years ago to remind yourself, it all comes back from listening to one kind of thing.
Yeah, true. And I used to do it manually where I write the summary points myself. And then I revisit them. I use Evernote.
Same.
But I found there's two ways I read a book. One is just going through a book summary and finding practical, actionable steps. Book summaries could be up to 50 minutes long, 2 hours long on YouTube.
Yeah.
Or you can buy book summaries on Audible. Right. I buy all the book summaries for it.
Yeah.
But while that gives you all the practical steps, there's something about reading a book, like now reading the Bitcoin Billionaires, the story about the Winklevoss twins from the Facebook days to how they got through that phase. And all the failures they had and how they got into Bitcoin. Really good book. And when you're listening to a book and listening to the entire book, it actually gives you time. It's almost like meditation where you're thinking about your business and it gives you the time while the book is talking about useless things that they're walking to the cafe.
Yeah. You really digest it.
And they're talking about useless, like they're sipping the coffee and the people around them. And this is not business advice. But while they're talking about this, your mind is going in. And that's when I come up with ideas. I came up with two ideas yesterday while listening to the book. So that's the advantage of reading the entire or listening to the entire book.
Yeah. I'd also add that, like, you know, like humans, we basically remember emotion over everything else. So you remember how someone makes you feel. You don't remember like the facts they told you. So if you listen to like a 30-minute summary of just pure facts from a book, that's like factual information you don't remember. Whereas if you listen to a whole book, it'll make you feel in different ways and you'll remember how you feel like excited for your business and things. And there's actually more going on in your human memory. So.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. You know, if you link emotions to anything, that's how people remember. I'm obsessed with not forgetting and I'm very harsh with any team member that tells me that I don't need to use a project management tool. Cause I say to you, no, you are a human and the human brain is unfortunately not the best. It's far from being the best. It's got a lot of issues there. And one of them is that we forget a lot.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed. I've got a smartwatch here. I rarely use it to look at the time and I don't use it for anything really except the count of how many steps I've taken and then that's it. And reminders, like calendar reminders. That's it. But the main reason I got it is I double click there, I got shortcuts. That's a Samsung one. I double click and I can record. So I press record. And that's how I record voice notes because I'm obsessed with not forgetting things. And then when it records, it goes to my phone, then it goes to someone that transcribes it for me. And then after that, I either add it to my project management tool to revisit after 3 months, 6 months, 2 months, 1 week, 1 year. So I don't want to forget it. Because this is something that I learned from someone that has made billions or has achieved success in whatever it is they're doing. And if I forget what they're doing, it could be a whole business idea that could go to waste. Or I send action steps. I call them action steps to my team. And my team has to add it to Asana. If they do it now, perfect. If they don't do it now, as long as it's not forgotten, as long as it's in a project management tool, I don't care things being delayed. I'm paranoid about things being forgotten. I'm paranoid.
Yeah,
about
You need to know that you've got a system that always has a next step in it. Otherwise, you're just creating stuff that goes somewhere. So you could always write book summaries. But if you never have any time in your like life to actually read your book summaries, it kind of just goes nowhere and drops off a cliff kind of thing.
That's what's happened with me. So I've stopped doing book summaries. Now I just send action steps. So either it goes into my Asana or goes to my team to action. That's all I have.
Ooh.
No book
summaries. Nice. Yeah, I'd love to dig into like all of your processes, really. It sounds like you've got a lot of good processes.
A business is essentially a system. So I'm obsessed with systemizing everything because that's what gives you an edge over competitors. And systemizing your life allows you to be more efficient and do more.
Yeah, definitely. As I'm writing a bit of a meta philosophy post about working on things and not in things, because you just go through life in it doing what's in front of you. But if you stop and work on what it is that you're doing, you know, you can set yourself up for success. And the things that you're doing when you're in life are just like the things you want to be doing all the time. So when you take time to build your system, you know that when you're just going through it, you'll come up with your book summary from 2 months ago and you'll remember it or whatever. In your reaction is the thing you want to be doing rather than just reacting to other people's inputs and things. So just always building the life you want, which is essentially just systemizing everything.
Look, read the book Checklist Manifesto, or a summary of it. It talks about how Korea Air reduced the number of crashes they had because of systems. Surgeons started reduced the number of people that died.
People just everything. Died
because of systems. Just because of basic checklists. Like, all right, like you, when you're doing a podcast, I'm sure you look, all right, the camera's working short. The audio's working short. Is it recording? Just the basics. Is my background okay? Is the host on time? All these, all my notes okay? And there's someone else that, what's his name? Mixergy, Andrew from Mixergy. He does this thing to the camera. I don't know what it does. It does this so the camera kind of catches your face, right? So he has that checklist that he follows. And because if you just depend on your brain to remember this instead of having a written checklist, it's just wasting your brain power. And unfortunately, you forget that your brain is far from perfect.
Accept your limitations, basically. Yeah, so I really loved everything you said about just acknowledging your own problems and how not good you are when it comes to memory or like motivation or anything really.
Self-awareness.
Yeah.
Self-awareness towards you personally, but self-awareness towards humanity, understanding human shortfalls because you're human.
Yeah. Yeah. So you kind of realize, same with like science, the more you know that you don't know kind of thing. And have you done any meditation to arrive at that, or is that more just reading a lot?
No, I read a lot. I've got on my phone. Where's my phone? It's there. I've got like, what's it called? There's two meditate, Calm and the other one.
Headspace. So,
Headspace. I've got both of them. I go through a period where I meditate for like a month and then I've read one thing. Meditation is essentially getting your brain to do nothing.
Yeah.
That's the core of meditation. And then the closest thing I get to meditation is either dancing or I think more so is just listening to a book or a podcast while exercising. That's the closest I have to meditation. Yeah. That's where my brain is doing nothing. But other than that, that's probably one of my biggest weaknesses. I need to start meditating. Yeah. Everyone does.
I'd say I did like the Vipassana. I didn't get a lot of results from meditating normally until I did the 10-day retreat. And suddenly it's like the best thing I've done in my life. But on it, my concept of meditation changed a bit. I didn't think of it as just purely trying to always think nothing. Kind of like if you think of surfing as, surfing is riding the wave, but it's also paddling out to the wave and hanging around for a minute and like having a nice time. And like, I enjoy the whole process of surfing, not just being on the wave. And the moment when your mind goes completely clear, that's when you're on the wave and you're riding it. And the first time you do it, you kind of like fall off and it feels awesome. And you can try practicing surfing for weeks and never actually do it properly, but it's still like a nice holiday. But you actually get all the benefits from like going out and paddling around and sort of being there and chilling. And so I kind of didn't feel so shit about myself when I wasn't permanently having nothing in my brain, but I was able to get it better and not feel so worried about it and get all the benefits from the rest of the meditation session as well when I realized
I'm really bad at that, man. I want to get there.
Do you know much about
transcendental meditation?
Not entirely, as in we basically to be terrible at names and
That's what I don't remember the name.
Check. Maybe it's exactly what I've been doing my whole life. And
it's what Ray Dalio recommends. He talks a lot about it in his book, Principles. He talks about how it's changed his life. But there's all different types of meditation. That's one of my weaknesses.
Is there something that interferes with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? Well, maybe you need some better help. And conveniently, BetterHelp quite literally exists in the form of an app called BetterHelp. So, counselling from a licensed therapist is just a really good idea. I can't tell you how helpful it is to unpack your problems confidentially with another human instead of bouncing around your own mind, often making things worse for yourself. So I'm delighted to be both using and promoting BetterHelp, the app. Basically, it's an online counselling app where you get matched with a qualified therapist of your choice. They have over 3,000 licensed therapists, and you can specify your requirements to get a therapist perfect for you and your problems. So whether you're depressed, angry, anxious, suffering from trauma, if you only feel comfortable with like a gay, black therapist, then you can put that in your preferences, and that was what you will get. So you can talk over text, chat, phone, or video at times that suit you, and get started in under 24 hours. It's available on most normal electronic devices, where you can schedule in calls weekly pretty much, and financial aid may also be available to those who qualify, so it's really worth investigating. But if not, you do still get a good deal with 10% off using the code GROWTHMINDSET. So why not get started today? Go to betterhelp.com/growthmindset. Simply fill out the questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with a counselor that you'll love within 24 hours. That's betterhelp.com/growth mindset.
You did mention about the value of podcasts that go deeper into things, and we've kind of glossed over a lot of stuff so far about like your businesses and getting to be a millionaire, and you've got like a team and you've got all these processes, and haven't really gone into these things so much. So I'd like to know a bit more about how you build a team, and how did you work out when you needed to hire someone? How do you work out what you should be hiring for, and how do you interview them? Like your favorite questions. So that's a lot of questions. Let's start with the first one. And how do you work out when to hire someone?
Look, finding out when to hire someone for me was easy, but I did it really badly. It was really easy because when I wanted something done, I'd just hire someone that does it. It was that simple for me. And there was one stage where IBC was hiring a person a day. But that's not the right way of thinking about it, because you need to think about, can you do this task? Scarcity breeds creativity. That's a quote I try to remember a lot now. So when you don't have the resources, what happens is that your team somehow finds a way to do the same things with less resources. How do I know that? Because I used to have over 100 people in one of my companies, went down to 10, and we still managed to do a lot of the same things. Using a lot of systems, using the 80-20 rule, focusing on that 20% that matters. There's a lot of tools that can replace. We used to have a lot of VAs, dozens of virtual assistants. A lot of what they did could be replaced by various tools. So that's a perfect example of scarcity breeding creativity.
Sure.
Looking at whether you could still do the work without hiring resources. So instead of giving the advice of the way I did it, because I didn't do it right, and now I hired someone that takes care of my HR because I'm not good at it, I'll tell you what I learned from someone else that built a really successful business with a handful of people. And what he says is that he tries to do as much as he can with the resources he has, and does not hire someone until he absolutely has to. And he's the one that's mentioned the quote, scarcity breeds creativity. It was a podcast interview. Mm. And he's absolutely right. And I'm seeing that myself, that when the team complains, hey, we need more people because they're used to us hiring a lot. We need more people. I'm like, no, we can't. The budget does not allow it because you have to talk to your CFO as well. Can you afford to hire someone? I didn't do that. And that kind of backfired. Yeah. And then when you say, guys, we cannot do it, let's see what we can do with the resources we have. Magically, they're able to do the work. So trying to do as much as you can with the resources you have. But I'm saying this as a person that's mastered the skill of delegation. If you're a person that is worried about giving the basic work because you want to do it yourself and you other people can't do it as good as you can, you're screwed. You cannot scale if you're going to have the mentality, why do I give it to someone else when I can do it myself? Close your eyes and imagine Bill Gates saying that. Well, yes, thousands of employees, or Mark Zuckerberg. Why do I need to hire a security expert when I can just do it myself? Mark Zuckerberg saying that. And then that will answer your question that you cannot scale by doing that. So you have to learn to hire people, the cliche, hire people smarter than you. And so I'll give you a checklist. Can you afford them? Yes, tick. Can you do that work with the resources that you have and systemize it efficiently using some sort of tool? No. Then third point is to hire. Now, how to find the right person to hire? Ask for references and don't call the references. Call the businesses they worked with. They did not give you as a reference. Everyone's going to give you references that are positive. Why waste your time calling them? But call the businesses that they did not, like, look at their clients and who's not a reference, call them, because why are they not giving you those people? So do your due diligence and then start working with them. Hopefully if you can with limited hours, and don't start testing them before you get them to start working with you full time. Because if you're a person like me that trusts people when they say they can do something, means they can do it, you're going to be screwed like I was. Because I had a lot of people say to me, yeah, we can do this, Mario, we can do this, X, Y, Z. I'm like, oh, great. You say you can do it, I'm sure you can. Instead of actually double checking that they can do it, trusting people, promising you they can do something without testing them or checking that they've done it could also backfire. So I hope that I've given you a few points. I hope that's a bit valuable.
Yeah.
And the last interesting point, Sam, last interesting point. You can hire two people. People that are already talented to do what you want them to do. So let's say you're hiring a marketing expert. You can hire someone who's a marketing guru that helped other businesses generate millions, but they're going to charge you for that service. They know their worth. Or you can find someone straight out of uni or high school that's really talented but does not have that experience and needs to be built into the gun that you want to hire to be expert. So there's two options. First one's more expensive but less risky. The second one's higher risk because he's just starting out, doesn't have a portfolio.
Yeah, they might do it for 6 months and then realize they hate marketing.
Exactly.
And they're higher their life.
Risk, but they're less expensive. So which option is better? You can say, look, I want to take the risk and I'll nurture them and if they're not good, I'll find someone else. Or you can get someone and say, I'm not going to take on the risk. Let others take the risk. And then when this person is experienced, I'll hire them. There's no right or wrong. It's just risk-reward balance.
Yeah. Like we said earlier, there's no black and white. As in, I've heard some people who go up on my show be like, definitely just go for experience. Young people just leave you after a year. And other people being like, all about young people. Like, old people aren't worth the money. And it's definitely depends on the situation. And,
I'm not a binary person. I'm never going to pretend that I know the answer. I know that both can work. I've got people in my company, some that are inexpensive, but really, really talented. And some of them work, some of them didn't. And at the same time, we hire people that have a lot of experience, but they charge a lot of money, sometimes too much money for the work they do. So, and look, supply, demand, people that are talented, a lot of demand for those people, their price will go up over time.
Yeah.
So it's difficult to see those outliers.
Do you have any advice on, if you are hiring young people, as we said, it's a lot of risk. Do you have any advice on how to reduce the risk of if you're going to hire someone to make sure that they are going to be successful?
So if you're hiring someone young and you don't know if they've got the test them. So give them small tasks and see how they deliver. It's that simple. It's honestly not hard. Give them a task, but it has to be something that you're good at. So you know if they're doing a good job. If it's something that you don't understand at all, if you have no knowledge about accounting, hiring someone who's young and is starting with accounting, but you don't know how to determine if they've done a good job, you're screwed.
Because
you can't tell. But if you're really good at marketing and you hire someone young and who's willing to learn, etc., that could be a good idea. So I'm not good in accounting. I'm really good at marketing. So I can hire someone in marketing and nurture them, but I can't do that with someone in accounting because I just don't like it. So I have to hire someone who's got experience and I can trust.
That seems like a very good set of rules to go for these things. Nice. Good. Good that we had this chance to ask more questions. Thanks. Then in terms of your businesses, did you sell any of them?
No, I don't have any exit strategy. I just don't know why would I want to. I'm fine. Financially, I'm fine. I just love building and scaling them.
Scaled them and they just keep on running, which is nice.
Yeah, I just leverage. I just use the synergy. Like I've got on the whiteboard behind me, like Fruity. I wish I can show you. Fruity, it says Fruity and then it has spokes.
Yeah.
I have one called Spread Love, which is selling healthy food products. Another one called Love CBD, which is CBD brand in Europe, and we're launching. Another one called Guilt Free Box, which is like paleo desserts. I'm testing all these business ideas. And the only reason I'm able to launch these new ideas is because of Fruity, because of the hundreds of thousands of clients that we have, the scale that we have. So instead of selling my businesses, I try to leverage the business to expand it into other companies. Zenz, the aromatherapy diffusers. I've got another one called CBD Pen. I'll be leveraging Zens to launch that one. IBC, the fundraising company, I've used that to launch the investor syndicate, investorsyndicate.io, which is like a program to help people raise their own money instead of us doing it for them. So I'm actually leveraging each business leads to other mini businesses or larger businesses. And I just like to use the synergy of them. And I just don't see a reason.
Definitely the network effect of like when you have more things going on, the better, more connections you can make.
Exactly. And have it, like for me to launch a new business in the health and wellness space relative to anyone or any other entrepreneur, I've got a head start. Why? Because I've already got those businesses in all the countries doing well. So I'd rather do that rather than sell the business and lose that competitive edge really.
Sweet. Where are you based?
I've been traveling for 6 years and counting. So I'm always, right now I'm in the Middle East, in Dubai. I was in Australia before that. Yeah, and cool. I'll be in Europe, probably Europe or US. I've been on the move for 6 years. Don't know why. Yeah. I'm just used to it.
Yeah, maybe you'll settle down a bit. I don't like moving. As in, I used to like working nomadically and I go somewhere for like 2 weeks or a month. But now I'm like kind of like 3 months at a time or something where I can actually take some hobbies and really get into the whole area at least. Otherwise it just feels a bit like a holiday rather than...
How do you do it when you have a lot of companies you're running?
Yeah.
The only way I can do it is if you have... Sounds like I'm spoiled, but it's actually so important to allow you to focus on your work. It's having an assistant with you. So whenever I travel, I'm always traveling with an executive assistant and he does everything. So he books the flights, he finds a place to stay, he does all the things. So even when I'm moving...
Yeah.
I feel like my office is the plane and Uber. And when we move to a place like an Airbnb or a hotel, he immediately sets up the desk and everything. Why? Because if I spend time setting up the desk, that's an hour wasted of me being able to jump on a podcast or speak to a client or come up with some marketing strategy.
Yeah. Booking all this other stuff is what's super annoying about traveling. If you're like working out which hostel to go to and which bus, and then like you delay it for a day. So you wait all the next morning for doing all the same shit, and it's just like, it's not worth it.
You're screwed, yeah.
Yeah. So we spoke about the lack of value of advice to your former self and going back in the past, but what about the future? So what do you think is going to be happening in 5 years' time? Where do you see yourself?
Man, I love this question. Why don't more people ask that question? Look, I had a goal to get to a certain level of wealth by the age of 30 and I missed it, unfortunately, but I'm financially comfortable.
It sounds like you're probably going to be okay.
Yeah, financially I'm fine. It's to have complete financial comfort. And it's honestly difficult now because a lot of people depend on my businesses, etc. So have financially be fine, but that's something that I've already ticked. I'm obsessed in dancing right now. I love Latin dancing, salsa, bachata, kizomba, especially bachata. I'm obsessed with it. Like I'm going out tonight in a few hours and 5 days a week I go out to Latin nights.
Doesn't seem like the right place. I just thought you'd be living in Mexico. I lived there for a bit. It was amazing.
It's everywhere. It's honestly, Dubai is crazy about it. Australia's, they do it every night. There's a place. So it's international and it's so fun and nice. My next challenge is to get myself out there more. It's just, I always like to challenge myself.
Personal brand, I think.
Not as much personal branding because just people knowing about me is pretty useless. Like I love people could.
But, have you read the book? Read the book Key Person of Influence, which kind of goes into some of the things you're talking about, like setting yourself up as like a good personal brand, but in the relevant area that you want to be in. So in your industry specific, by starting a podcast on investing or something and getting just to the top of just that vertical. So even if you only got like 1,000 people listening to you, it's just the investors. It talks about how to do that and writing a book and really establishing yourself as someone that's a go-to in that area. And then you just instantly write at the top. If there's people like know you, like you spoke about, they've heard you talking for hours on the podcast. They trust you. And if they want to add any advice, like they'll go to you and they'll buy from you just because they already know you kind of thing. And it's like, you can then set up any business in that area so much more easily.
True. That's one. And that's going to happen very soon. It's already, I'm in the blockchain space. It's probably the only space that would be relevant because health and wellness, I'm not too passionate about it. I've got other people in my company that are passionate there and leading. Yeah. But where I'm really enjoying the most is actually working with other entrepreneurs. And I didn't know I'll ever enjoy it, but then I've had a lot of people come to me.
Yeah.
Asking for advice. And it's actually pretty fulfilling to be part of other people's journey. I never expected it. And I thought it was cheesy when people say, I like helping others. It brings me happiness. I'm like, yeah, sure. Just love the check at the end of the month from your podcast or whatever. But it's actually true. It's incredibly fulfilling.
Definitely. That's one of the reasons why I started the podcast, like I said, about tutoring people. I was tutoring in biology, not in business. My mate's little sister, she was like failing her A-levels and she wasn't going to go anywhere in life kind of thing. And she was at this shit college where everyone did crap, but I didn't even teach her biology. I just gave her like a growth mindset and was like, you know what? You're going to do as well as you work right now. Just everyone else on your course, sure, they might fail, but you don't have to. You can put in the revision. It's up to you. And I only had like two sessions with her and then she got A's and everything, got like a funded place on her college degree. And just from me giving her a growth mindset, and like, I felt so much happier when she got all A's than I did when I got all A's. I wasn't even that bothered about it. And I was like, shit, how have I got so much happiness from like just a few half hour conversations with some girl? And I was like, wow. And ever since then, I've just loved coaching people and helping them and stuff. And that's kind of why I'm doing the podcast, I hope.
And it's actually human nature. Tony Robbins talks a lot about it. There's a checklist of like five things that lead to happiness. One of them is progress. I was just Googling it while you're speaking, but I couldn't find it. One of them is progress. One of them is stability and security. But another one is change to keep things interesting. I forgot all of them. And different ones have different levels of importance for different people. But one of them is actually giving. Genuinely giving brings fulfillment. So when you're giving value, when you're helping people, charities should be making a lot more money if everyone understands that when you genuinely give and genuinely help someone, it's a selfish thing to do because it brings you happiness. And I've experienced this firsthand and without realizing it.
Yeah. It totally brings you happiness in the moment. And it also kind of comes back around a lot more. As in, if you have got a network of people that you've helped out, who's going to come help you out when you've got a problem? Everyone. If you've got a network of people that you've just been like leeching off the whole time, are they going to really help you out much? No. And you build success for yourself.
You know, Gary Vee is an influencer that brings you a lot of, very aspirational, gives you a lot of energy, a lot of drive. For people like me that have built their businesses, we don't get that much value from listening to him if you're already driven. I'm already very driven. And what he says is not much practical. But there's one thing, first, tremendous respect to what he's done. It's incredible. But there's one thing he says that's so true, is that giving, the whole jab, 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 right hook. Even though he's repeated it so many times, I don't think people understand how powerful it is. The number one message I send on anyone on my LinkedIn or anyone that contacts me, no matter who they are, how can I bring you value? I don't have time to do it myself anymore. My team does it. The only question is, how can I bring you value? That's it. So that, and the way people respond to it, it's just so heartwarming. They actually appreciate when you ask that question. We genuinely mean it. And I try to bring value whenever I can. Now, I don't do it personally. Again, it's hard to scale. But if you can get people to do it for you and give them a script, and then the people will come to me and say, Mario, can you help this guy do this? I'm like, yeah, connect him to that person. So the power of reciprocation is undervalued, in my opinion.
Definitely. Yeah, some of the best people that I spoke to on the podcast, like when I email them, whatever, they'll always email back with the answers, but they always ask like, what else can I do for you? And like, you just start noticing, shit, he keeps on asking. I hadn't even thought of what he could do for me. But then it just like makes me think, oh yeah, you could probably help me with this other thing. And then there he is doing nice stuff for me. And I'm like, shit, why don't I ask people what else I can do for them? Because I love helping them all the time. And
you'll get it from me. Just expect to get it from me. So I do that every time. Like, all right, Sam, so what is it that you're doing? How can I bring you value? How can I help?
Yeah. But then I promote his episode way more than I do some other people that have never got back to me to try and help.
Yeah, but if he genuinely means it, if a podcaster told me, I can't remember what he wanted, I connect him to someone that could work on some new business idea, another podcaster who just sold his podcast, I'm helping him move on to his next thing. So bring in value. But now I have to point out something important, and not many people will admit it. The people that were helping you, they're like, yeah, we help everyone. They cannot humanly help. I cannot do it. I get hundreds of messages every day, emails and LinkedIn messages. I cannot help everyone. So what I try to do is focus on the people that I can actually help and the people that it makes sense for me to help. It makes sense for me to help you. You're a podcaster. You're a person that has a lot of respect. You connect, very well connected. So it makes sense for me to help you. So being able to, that's me personally helping. Other people, I have to connect them to someone else. Maybe my team finds a way to help them. But if Gary Vee actually helps every single person that connects him, he will not have time to run his business. He'll be Mother Teresa. So it's really, you have to be careful not to be abused by helping every single person, giving so much. And I've seen this happen. People that are so obsessed in helping that I have money to pay the bill. And it breaks my heart. And I help them to monetize that.
Yeah, help people, definitely.
Don't hesitate to ask for things in return. Because what's the point of helping if you don't ask for things in return?
Yeah, and then there's sort of like the dilemma of like, if you spend your whole day just working in Oxfam for free, you're not really going to make that much value. If you're like a developer who could be earning hundreds of thousands of pounds a year, you could just spend most of your time earning this money and just give like half of that to the charity. And you know,
money is all about creating value. Who do you give money to? Someone that gives you nice food, someone gives you headphones that work well, someone gives you a house that looks nice and is warm. So it's all, you pay for value. So if you're a developer, the most value you can bring is not building houses or giving, you know, leaflets on the road. But the most value you can bring is developing an incredible protocol or an incredible app that can bring value to millions of people. That's where you can bring the most value. And that's what you should do. And money represents that, unless you're scamming people or you're being unethical. Money represents the amount of value you can bring. Someone who's working in McDonald's will not bring the same value as Richard Branson. Doesn't mean they're less important or anything like that. It just means that the money they get at $10 an hour, I'm sure if Richard Branson came to you and said, hey, I'll charge you $20 an hour, double the people at McDonald's, but I'll do whatever you want me to do. You'll pay that because he brings a lot more value. So focus on where you can bring the most value. If you're great at podcasting, that's what you're passionate about and you're really effective at that, double down on that. Double down on what works. But what works with me is building companies, having a vision, having a strategy to achieve it and leading a team to do that. And that's where I put all my time. I don't do anything else because that's where I bring most of my value. My partner would argue with me, Mario, why don't you do the dishes? Say, I'm not doing them because I'm selfish. I'm doing them because I can actually spend that hour to do the dishes. I usually do them. I can listen to a book doing them. But I'd rather spend that hour doing something in my business that could end up to be a company that makes six figures, seven figures. And then I can pay for someone that likes to do dishes. And there's people that like to do basic work. And that's what that makes them happy. So focus on what you're good at and what you enjoy doing as well.
Nice.
Allocation of resources. I mean, the world is about allocating resources and money.
Yeah, yeah. And there is, because it is good to fix some of your weaknesses, but often it's like, be like, just acknowledge your weaknesses and just double down on your strengths is like usually more effective.
Oh, you have to. You talk about hiring. A cliche that's absolutely true. Hire people that compensate for your weaknesses. It's that simple.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But on this note, you said that your big strength is building businesses. What skill do you think would make you a lot more valuable than you currently are if you could acquire one skill?
Financial control. Screwed up my companies because I overspent like crazy because I didn't have a CFO by my side. So that's a good skill if I had. But then again, that one's easy to compensate. It's just hiring someone who's a good financial officer.
But do you think that your success is partly because of you are good at spending? Because I'd say that I'm probably in the opposite direction of, and I was always taught to never spend my money. And like, that's probably where I missed out on some of my businesses that could have got bigger faster if I just had offset what I was doing or paid some money for advertising and marketing and things.
We remember we discussed it's not binary. So it's a balance.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's sometimes where you should spend, sometimes where you should be frugal. It's just when. It's a timing thing. A skill for me to have, I get too excited. When there's a new idea, I could have almost shiny object syndrome.
Yeah.
I'm now, pam, 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 do it now,
definitely.
Guys. And I spread my team to think that's my weakness. That's probably the only thing that I've had to train myself to work on.
Yeah, I have this problem, which is what I've been good with the podcast is this has been my permanent side hobby and it's just kept going. And it's nice just observing how much it grows when you don't let yourself do something else. Whereas whatever idea I'm doing, it'll be awesome. And then suddenly I'm like, shit, I've got this another great idea because I'm always having ideas and you just see how great it is and you're like, shit, I need to do this as well. And then you're not doing the current thing properly.
Shiny object syndrome is deadly for entrepreneurs. You have to be very careful. And again, it's a balancing act because one strategy I have is I throw pebbles and then when a pebble hits, I throw a cannonball. So you have to test different ideas and then double down on what works. That's the lean strategy of doing business. But at the same time, when do you know if you're throwing way too many pebbles and not noticing when one hits? That's shiny object syndrome because you don't double down on one hit. So it's again, it's balancing the two.
Really like that analogy. Nice. Okay. So I think what would you say is the kindest thing someone has done for you?
There's not many things, honestly, I can think of.
No way.
Pretty rough couple of years.
Yeah.
I've had people that were stood by my side during the toughest of times in my business. That's probably the kindest thing. Some of those people are, you know, they're in my mind right now. Last 3 years have been brutal. I've been through so many things, too many black swan events to name. And there's some people that stood by my side throughout that period. But then again, I had some of those people, but I'll tell you, I have 4 minutes before I have to jump off. So I want to tell you something interesting. This is what drives me mad. I had two of those people that were so close sending me messages of support. Mario, we're by your side, etc. One of them turned out to be faking it the entire time because they were part of the scam.
Yeah.
And I remember even a call on my vlog. I had a call from them and I talked to the vlog. It's on my YouTube. I said to the vlog, that's what drives me every day. People like that, that are supportive. You know, he said this, he said that. He said he's by my side. He's supportive. We're like family. And then later in that day, I got a call and I found out also on camera, you can see it, that he was actually part of the scam. So it's hard. And another person who's been incredibly, incredibly supportive, Mario, like family and stuff, they stole something and sold it. A Telegram account I used to have with hundreds of people. They took admin access. So yeah, it's been a tough period, man. Been a tough period.
Yeah, crikey. Then going much further back in life, what's one of your earliest memories?
I'm not the best person to ask that. I forgot a lot of things. So my earliest memory in general?
Yeah, like something from like when you were super young, like when the kind of baby toddler things that you can kind of just remember vaguely and
honestly,
for some weird reason.
That's something, I don't know. I've had a psychologist. I'm not depressed or anything like that, but just trying to get me to understand why the hell I forgot most of my past. I genuinely forgot most of it. I cannot remember a lot of it. And I'm being completely honest. I don't know why. Even high school, a lot of it, yeah.
No way.
I don't remember, man. I'm not the best person to ask. I genuinely can't remember.
It's interesting because, you're saying like you're so obsessed with them not forgetting things. But I'm quite dyslexic, but I quickly realized that I'd instantly forget stuff. So I'd always write stuff down when I was young. So I actually wasn't diagnosed as dyslexic for a very long time because I was just building systems to deal with myself. It was only like later when it started to get like too much and you get to like A-levels and you have so much stuff to remember. I just couldn't deal with it that I actually like had this come out and went to a psychologist and they had this whole report like, oh, you're like fucking mega dyslexic, by the way. You'd have all this extra time things. And like, oh, this is so much easier now. And, yeah, it feels like you have some of the similar issues to me because I'm pretty obsessed with the fact that I know I'll always forget stuff and trying to set up systems to help myself.
Yeah, I'm pretty good with, in terms of short-term things, I remember a lot. Like I remember a lot of times I'm like, hey, did you do this? Did you do that? And they're like, oh yeah, I forgot. I'm like, man, I'm remembering things for all the other people. And then I go crazy. Why isn't it on Asana, the project management tool? But I don't know why all like things from a long time ago, I don't remember. Short-term things, medium to short-term, I remember. It's weird. Mm.
Did you ever have any like accidents? Because I had quite a bad rugby accident when I was younger.
No.
Never. I still got like a lump on my skull where like it sort of went out of place. Anyway, cool. Random. Cool. Well, thanks.
I'll have to jump into, that's all right. I have to jump into that podcast. And yeah, it's, they're messaging me now. I want to say one last thing, Sam. I've got a few seconds. That's a really good podcast. You asked very insightful questions. So it was a real pleasure.
Thanks.
To be asked the right questions. It wasn't generic and I think it was a lot of value to your audience.
Yeah.
And I genuinely say this. So, keep it up, man. You got a new listener as well. I'll be listening to your other episodes.
Oh, thanks so much. I'm just keen to hear about your podcast when it comes out and I'll definitely subscribe to the email list and follow your LinkedIn and stuff.
We'll let you know as soon as it does. Thank you. Yeah. Man.
All right. Enjoy the next podcast.
Sam, I really appreciate your time, man. Keep it up. Thank you so much. And I'll ask you, I gotta go now, but I'll ask you, I'll send you a message afterwards. Anything I could do for you, let me know.
Okay? Sure. Will do. Thanks so much.
All right. Take care, Sam. Thanks, man. Bye bye.
Ta-ra.
You've just listened to an episode of the Growth Mindset Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on your preferred app and give me a good rating, as these go a really long way. If you are unable to give good feedback right now, try sharing the show with a friend who will, or just wait for the show to improve. If you have any ideas for the show or you just want to chat, then please reach out to me on Twitter at SamHarrisTweets or Instagram at SamJamSnaps. Show notes and other links to topics discussed in the episodes are available at the website growthmindsetpodcast.com. Thanks so much for listening. Give yourself a big hug from me. If you're with a friend, give them a hug as well. And I hope you enjoy your next podcast.